the last 5 to 10 years, you've seen a lot more focus on adversaries going after the supply chain, which is where I live in terms of secure product development, going after the OT and control systems because they have a higher consequence impact, especially for critical infrastructure or hospitals or data centers and so forth. So the two roles are very much complementary and they have to work together.
This is a Security Weekly production. Security Weekly is a resource of Cyber Risk Alliance.
The Cybersecurity Collaborative is proud to present CISO Stories. Each week, CISO Stories takes a deep dive on security leadership with one of the contributors to my latest book, the best-selling CISO Compass, Navigating Cybersecurity Leadership Challenges with Insights from Pioneers, as well as other top CISOs and industry security leaders. The Cybersecurity Collaborative is a unique membership community enabling cybersecurity leaders to work together in a trusted environment. To learn more, visit securityweekly.com/CSC or visit cyberleadersunite.com. I am your host, Todd Fitzgerald, and this week we welcome Jason Christman, VP Chief Product Security Officer at Johnson Controls.
I began my career in the Air Force with cybersecurity, looking at vulnerabilities and threats, and it was just, I was bitten by the bug of wanting to figure things out, solve puzzles, go deeper into systems, learn how to improve the quality of the various systems that I was interacting with. And it was a never-ending puzzle. It just led me down many different paths. And I realized that the impact I could have was far-reaching across the various development organizations that I was interacting with. And then as I transitioned into industry earlier in my career, it opened up. And about that time, we were embracing connectivity, cloud, convergence, and that just opened up a whole other opportunity set for me to drive value. And then getting into the area of product security specifically, the ability to design security in from the beginning, right? And truly implement that shift left mentality was really appealing to me because now I could help solve my customers' problems. So it's been a passion of mine. And like many CISOs and security leaders, I find myself up late reading blogs, journals, listening to podcasts, and just staying up on the latest trends and threats and issues. So it's just an area I enjoy very much.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that's so important for anybody in these leading roles to keep up with the technology. And the technology seems to be changing at a faster rate. I mean, I know it's always been changing, but it just seems in the last couple of years that there's a lot out there that companies probably aren't leveraging yet.
I would agree. I mean, if you look in the industry that I'm in, you're seeing a tremendous amount of convergence. You know, years ago, we would talk about, you know, IT and OT, the operational technology or control systems. And now we're talking cloud connectivity, smart edge, autonomous systems. And all that is very technology rich. It pulls in your AI and ML capabilities. It requires you to have what we call a continuous integration development environment. All these things are happening rapidly, and a lot of it's just come onto the scene within the market in the last 5-10 years. So you're right. It is moving very quickly, and you need to keep up to be competitive.
Well, I know you work with Johnson Controls, which, you know, does a lot of smart connected buildings. And it always, you know, when I hear about the buildings, it always takes me back to that breach that, you know, the one we're talking about, you know, at Target with the HVAC vendor years ago. And now we're looking at integrating all these buildings together.
Well, we are. And there's good reasons for doing so. The customers we talk to want the outcomes of healthy and smart and autonomous buildings that can realize, you know, net zero decarbonization goals, more secure facilities, amazing outcomes and experiences if you're running a stadium or an airport, right? Data centers and so forth. And all of these different types of facilities, the technologies within them used to be isolated. Hackers really didn't take an interest in these systems. There wasn't value perceived or real for them, 20, 30 years ago. But now you're seeing that attackers can have an impact on productivity, on cyber physical systems, on the livelihood, the safety, or the environmental impacts. So buildings really, I mean, they're the places we work, we live, we play, we educate, right? A lot happens in a building. And so therefore now it's becoming a richer target for the attackers. And as we embrace smarter technologies to make buildings more efficient or more secure, the attackers just see that as another challenge, another puzzle, another opportunity to either deploy ransomware and get paid out or to have some other kind of impact. And so that requires that from a security angle, we pay more attention to how we securely design and operate those buildings through their life cycle.
I think a lot of us look at buildings as those things that we just go into and they're around us, but we don't really think much of them. And I know during the pandemic, I rent office space in you could think of it as like a WeWork place. It's a place called Dogpatch Labs in Dublin, Ireland. And there's, pre-pandemic, there'd be about 400 employees of 50 different companies, all startups. Instagram was actually started in the U.S. office in San Francisco of that kind of a facility. And they were putting things in there to monitor the movement around the building, trying to get better at their social distancing. And then there was monitoring on the bathrooms to make sure that there weren't more than, two people in the bathrooms. And, so they were trying to figure out how people were moving around the building. And I thought that's pretty amazing. Who thinks of, that we need that kind of technology, but it actually is very useful for how you're going to manage the office environment.
The pandemic certainly brought an urgency to those types of technologies, but there's still a need, right, for energy efficiency and how the blinds or the windows shade or how the HVAC system is, interacting with all the other systems in the building to make it more efficient. Again, that positive experience for the occupants and tenants of the building. When you go into one of those shared workspaces, you just want the technology to work. And I would suggest to you that we're going to see buildings in the next several years become much more autonomous, and you're going to see buildings that are more responsive to the users in some new and bold ways.
Just what would a couple of those ways be? Do you think that we're going to start to see?
Well, I mean, if you look at when people walk into a building and you have an RFID tag or some kind of your phone with you, it's going to know typically where you go in the facility. The cafeteria might know how many orders to place or how many people are coming in that day based on the parking garage. You're going to see new technology that help you understand what conference rooms are anticipated to be open. And so you don't go room to room to room, hopping around trying to find a place to sit. It's just going to become a much more friendly, safe, and welcoming experience for those occupants. And that's from an individual's point of view. For the facility owner and operator, they're going to see some real tangible savings on the energy consumption of that building. And certainly to meet the requirements of new regulations coming out around sustainability, they're going to need to be able to demonstrate that, hey, my building can actually perform at this higher level. Here's the proof and here's the data to show that. So it's really becoming an amazing new tool set. And if you look at data centers, right, they've always had a lot of security around that. They want chillers that operate securely. They can't afford to have, the temperature fluctuate. Hospitals and emergency rooms, operating rooms can't afford to have the pressure incorrect within an operating environment. Otherwise, they have to stop it. And even things that we don't always think about, but those fire alarm detection and suppression systems, right? If they're not operating correctly, you lose your certificate to operate and you can't bring people into the building. Mm-hmm. All these things are becoming more connected. Sure. with AI involved. Again, security has to come along for the ride so that someone doesn't impact that outcome. Yeah.
So to that end, so today we're talking about the chief product security officer and you're, you know, clearly working in, you know, at, with a manufacturer that manufactures these different types of, you know, building systems, which I think is fascinating, which affects, you know, really all of our environments that, that CISOs are managing today. But the role of the chief product security officer, how did that come about, and you know, how is that different from the role of what a CISO may be managing in an organization?
Well, typically the CISO has the enterprise network and systems environment that they're responsible for, right? And the chief product security officer is looking at all the software. If you're a manufacturer or a software vendor, all the different products that are connected, if they have software and a microchip in them, you need to have someone driving good product secure design, security by design. And those two roles are partners, right? So when I talk to CISOs at our customers on a regular basis, I always look first at to what their risk point of view is. What keeps them up? What are they concerned about? What are the security controls or features or capabilities I need to make sure are designed into our products to help them more effectively manage risk? And again, in the last 5 to 10 years, you've seen a lot more focus on adversaries going after the supply chain, which is where I live in terms of secure product development, going after the OT and control systems because they have a higher consequence impact, especially for critical infrastructure or hospitals or data centers and so forth. So the two roles are very much complementary. And they have to work together. In my corporation, we have a CISO who I work with very closely because we know risk can spill over from one side to the other. And then together, we help better serve our customers by understanding their point of view.
The article this podcast is based upon can be viewed in the best-selling cybersecurity leadership book, CISO Compass, Navigating Cybersecurity Leadership Challenges with Insights from Pioneers. So when you have that CISO role and the chief product security officer role, do you report, does one report to another, or do you report into different parts of the organization?
It is entirely dependent upon the organization that you work in and how they want to set it up. This chief product security officer role has a lot of touch points to product management, product engineering, the folks who manage all your cloud hosted systems and all of that. And so I report up to the engineering side of the house to the CTO. Our CISO reports up through the CIO. But it can be done in any number of combinations. What matters most is that whoever's sitting in those roles has a very close working partnership and is making sure from a business standpoint, you're addressing risk appropriately and you've got your customer focus in mind. Now, for our customers, if they're not a software company, which many of them are not, they run facilities and buildings, they could be commercial real estate or a hospital, they're not producing software necessarily, right? And so I have to look at the daily challenges that CISO has, and I still have to be that person's partner. How do I make sure that the products that we put out into the market help that person satisfy the NIST framework or keep their ISO certification or in general address risk when it comes to adversaries going after the building technologies? Mm-hmm. So again, it is that healthy shared responsibility and partnership model up front.
So what sort of frameworks does the chief security officer look at?
Well, when it comes to standards, again, depends on the industry you're in. You could be in automobile manufacturing, could be in buildings or others. For me and those that are in the embedded control systems and OT space, there's the ISA 62443 standard, a control system security standard, really good at the embedded level and systems level. But as you know, these technologies now operate within a converged and cloud connected environment. So we also look at CIS controls. We look at the NIST 853 controls, and we look at the ISO 27001 controls. So there isn't one standard that is the overarching standard. It's how they come together. Because when you look at your stack of what you're bringing your products and software into, you have to look at the entire risk framework. You know, and then on top of that, some industries you know, do credit card processing? How does it fit with PCI DSS? How does it fit with healthcare requirements, right? All that comes into play.
So how do you find that works with the engineers where, you know, you're the security guy saying we've got to build these things into the products, and then you've got your engineers. How does that work?
Well, you know, the motivation on the engineering side is to put out a product to market as quickly as they can that has, you know, great features that the market's asking for. My job as a product security leader is to make sure that security comes along for the ride. It's there from the beginning, and that I focus on the developer experience. It becomes just part of what they do. It's automated into the CI/CD processes and DevOps framework that they have, so that it isn't a burdensome activity that they have to perform. Yes, there are additional steps for security. That's part of incorporating quality into your product. But to make it a selling point, not just for our customers, but also for our developers to see that what they're doing matters, it's adding as part of the value stream of engineering, and that what they're putting out to market actually is helping to win the day. Right, it's either resulting in more sales or greater customer outcomes and satisfaction, which then results in more investment back into their innovation work.
Mm-hmm. What sort of qualifications do you, you know, how technical do you need to be a chief product security officer?
It is very helpful to have an understanding of product management, product engineering. It's also helpful to understand certainly the cybersecurity from a application level, what happens down everywhere from the kernel of a system all the way up through the applications and solutions that operate. It's important to understand the connectivity stack of how that all works together. So I would say there's elements in my role that are fairly technical because I'm on the engineering side of the house. But in the end, as a leader, I have to understand business impact and how to translate the security work that we're doing to outcomes for our customers and for our board and for our executive leadership.
And you know, how does that work with the other CISOs and the other companies in terms of, you know, understanding what that impact is? Are they looking more to you to help figure out what some of those risks are, or do you find that the CISOs are pretty knowledgeable in what those risks are when they're coming to you?
Let me give you an example. So, you know, many CISOs have concentrated on their enterprise IT network. And then a few years ago, there's been heightened awareness and focus on manufacturing systems and the OT and the programmable logic controllers, and everything goes into a manufacturing site. And of course, you know, by extension, other control systems like the OT in a building or on a production line. And so CISOs are becoming much more attuned to that risk area. They're becoming more educated on it. They understand that it's different than what they've dealt with in the past. There isn't necessarily a good asset baseline for all this equipment. This equipment is typically managed by the operations side of the house, not the IT side of the house. So those two worlds are coming together, and CISOs are quickly learning how those systems operate. And they're also learning about some of the frustrations of the fact that those systems have been lagging behind IT when it comes to, you know, interoperability, visibility in a SOC to monitor the risk. A lot of legacy systems that are out there, they're in place for 15, 30 years. You know, how do we start to then drive faster patches, upgrades? How do we segment these things appropriately? So a lot of the same concepts and approaches that a CISO has for their IT network, they're starting to learn how to adapt that and work that in the OT space.
Mm-hmm. How do you get the OT side where you've got production lines and you need to put some patches in, but there's that conflict between, you know, touching the production line and possibly messing up production versus making an IT change. How do we bring those two pieces together?
Well, it goes back to relationships and having a more deliberate process for making those changes occur, right? So in IT, things are very transactional. They happen at a higher speed. You want to push out an update to an operating system. For most individual users, it's largely transparent. It just happens in the background. With an OT system, you have to go engage that leader of that environment and say, here's what we need to do to upgrade security. They usually understand that, that security is important. Then it becomes a discussion on timing, how, what testing do we need to do? Let's make sure it doesn't break the operation or the production facility. So it's balancing your speed of transactions and managing risk with the need to have a good deliberate relationship in place to upgrade those environments. And eventually, as that technology becomes more IT-like, with newer technology involved, you'll be able to push updates without an impact to the operation.
If somebody's a CISO today and they want to move into, you know, become this product security officer, what sort of things do you think they would need to do or to learn to make that transition?
Certainly engage your engineering organization, learn how product management operates, the systems, the strategies, the key roles and players involved. Start to interact with your external customers more, because I spend a considerable amount of time listening to the needs and risk concerns of our customers outside my company. And then start to look at how you can take security and drive new features and differentiation. Think of it as you're selling a product. I'm selling security for a company that sells products. And how do we make security part of the value proposition? It's not just a risk and governance factor, which it is for me, but it's more than that. It's right. It's giving something to the market that's of better quality. And so learning all those disciplines of product and management and engineering, talking with sales leaders, account leaders, and becoming part of that whole business process will help speed a CISO's transition into this space. And frankly, you know, there's opportunities to learn about, hey, how do you do AppSec? How do you, you know, what does a CI/CD process really mean? How do you automate that? What are the vendors and technologies used to make that happen? Mm-hmm. And there's a whole set of security partners and vendors that are focused purely on product security, application security, cloud security.
Mm-hmm. I know it's getting a lot of airplay today about product security and focusing in on that. And maybe because in the past, we haven't looked down to that supply chain level. And now as some environments are getting more mature in their IT systems, they're looking at, well, what about the OT part of the business? And what about these other, you know, firmware things that, you know, that we haven't been looking at that we should pay more closer attention to?
Well, product security is getting more attention because of the increasing threat landscape. You know, we've seen supply chain type of attacks that have far-reaching impact across a large customer base. We've seen more regulation coming on board. Here in the U.S., you've got the executive order that came out of the White House a year ago that addresses zero trust, supply chain, software bill of materials, and a number of other facets around reporting of incidents and vulnerabilities. You're seeing that show up in the EU, right, with the Cybersecurity Act there and around the world. And so product security is becoming much more of a focus area for companies that build and release products, because they want to make sure they're putting their best foot forward, shifting left, getting it right. Because in the end, the CISO is left with whatever the manufacturers or suppliers provide them with. And if we can do a better job on the product side of giving them something that's more resilient, alleviates some of their headaches, the better off they'll be, the more resilient they'll be, and the outcomes that we profess will be realized.
I think that's a great perspective. Well, thanks, Jason. It's really been a pleasure talking today. Do you have any last words, any final advice for emerging CISOs, new CISOs, current experienced CISOs as they're, you know, working to secure their environments and make sure our products are secure?
Definitely. It goes back to what we started with. Engaging the software and product companies that are your suppliers, asking them what their product security program looks like, asking them if they have a leadership structure, asking them the key questions about how they're going to be a good partner to help you as a CISO manage risk. We see that today in the questionnaires, the pre-sale questionnaires, but go further than that. Engage some of your key suppliers. Have those conversations with their product security team and let them know what your key concerns are and challenge them to incorporate those controls and features in the products in future releases. This is a ecosystem approach to solve this challenge, and we all need to work together. And I would suggest to you that being a product security officer is very exciting. Just like in the CISO side, every day is a new day. There's new challenges. The greatest benefit that I gain out of this is the opportunity to design it right from the beginning and make it better for the rest of the market.
That sounds very attractive, especially as people are walking into all these legacy environments. They might want to start something from the beginning.
Agreed.
Well, thanks again, Jason.
This has been awesome. Thank you, Todd. Really appreciate the time today.
Thank you. Visit more CISO Stories podcasts on securityweekly.com, where you will find an index to prior episodes. The Cybersecurity Collaborative is a unique membership community enabling cybersecurity leaders to work together in a trusted environment. To learn more, visit securityweekly.com/CSC or visit cyberleadersunite.com.